Today is Easter Sunday, and can I confess something to you? Can I be real? Out of all the sermons that I preach throughout the year, I think the Easter sermon might be the one that I look forward to the least. Low-key, I hate preaching on Easter. I know this is a great start to the Easter sermon, but I promise I'm going somewhere. And I'll tell you why. It's first of all, there are these unrealistic expectations that somehow I have to sell you the best life of Jesus and get you leaving this place buying into that. But second, one of the hardest things to do as a storyteller is to tell a story where everyone already knows the ending. Why? If you know the ending, all of the drama gets sucked out of the story. That's why we call it a spoiler. If you know the ending ahead of time, it literally spoils the experience of the story, doesn't it? Anyone here ever accidentally read a spoiler online for a movie or a TV show and it completely ruined your experience of that story? For me, I remember watching Star Wars for the first time with my friend in elementary school. And when we started watching it, Darth Vader comes on screen for the first time. Like, dude, who is this guy? Look at that aura. We didn't call it aura back then. We said, that's tight. That's tight. And we saw Darth Vader come on screen. And my friend looks to me, is like, that's actually Luke's father. And if you've never seen Star Wars, that comes at the end of the second movie. We're in the beginning of the first movie. And so I'm watching this whole thing, and we finally get to the second movie. We get to that epic scene where he says, Luke, I am your father, and it doesn't hit. Like, everyone's saying that's the greatest scene of all time. Does not hit because it was spoiled for me ahead of time. Right? We don't like stories where we already know the ending, but for many of us, when we come to church, when we hear the Easter story, this is how it feels. Regardless of if you grew up in the church or not, regardless of whether you identify as a Christian or not, I'm sure that chances are that you've at least heard the ending of the story before. The tomb is empty. Jesus is alive. Yay. Right? That's the story of Easter. Where's the drama? Where's the magic? Who cares about a story we already know the ending to? But there are those rare exceptions where the ending is so good that it actually enhances and redefines the rest of the story that came before it. The Sixth Sense, okay? I'm really into movies, as you can tell. It changed the face of cinema forever. If you remember, you watch a story. When you get to that ending, spoiler alert, but it's been over 2 decades, it changes everything. What? He was alive the whole time, or he was dead the whole time? You realize at the end of the movie that things were not as they seem, and you begin to comb through the earlier scenes in your mind, and you see them in a brand new way. Your second time watching The Sixth Sense is different from your first time. Now, one of my favorite movies of all time, I talked with Yasuda and Diana about this, is a film by Denis Villeneuve called Arrival. Has anyone seen it? 2016's Arrival. The first time I saw it, I was very much enjoying the movie, but then the ending hits, right? The Nature of Daylight by Max Richter starts playing. The cinematography is stunning. The performances are captivating. I'm sobbing. It's pure cinema. And I'm watching this ending, and the entire story takes on new meaning. And I find myself rethinking each scene. It hits different. That's the power of a good ending. And so even though you're here, even though we know the ending of the story that's been told for centuries and centuries, what I want to propose to you today is that the Easter story has the same effect. The ending of this story has the power to radically redefine our own. And here's the thing. We may know the ending of Jesus' story, but none of us know the ending of our own story. Am I right? Right? We feel the drama every single day of our lives. We're in the drama. We live the drama. We are the drama, right? We are in the drama of our story. But the beauty of Easter is that the power of Jesus' ending story radically redefines our own. He's alive, and that has something profound to do with our lives as well. One of my favorite stories in our family is a story about my mom. And my dad told me before they had me, my mom one time, she locked her keys in our Buick, which is a really old car if you don't know. She locked her keys in our car, which is very common. Like, you've probably done it too. It happens. But he told me that she locked her keys in her car while the car was in drive. And the car started rolling away, and she was literally chasing after it, trying to get to the keys. Luckily, the car accident wasn't too big, but it did crash into another car. And we love telling that story. My mom's like, I don't remember that. But obviously, it happened, right? Now, you may not have lost your keys in a runaway car, but what I want to propose today is that I get a sense that many of us here in this place have lost something else in life. And it's something more important than your car keys or your wallet or your phone. For many of us, we've lost the will to live. And maybe not in the sense that you want to end your life, but in the sense that many of us have settled with merely existing rather than truly living. And this is often the unspoken cry of so many people today. I want to live. I want to feel alive, but I just don't know how. I don't know if you guys, when you're doing that exercise, asking each other the question, but was it kind of hard to think about the last time you truly felt alive? Was it hard to actually define what that was? And I think this is the unspoken cry of our generation. We want to live, but we don't know how. I'll tell you what we do know how to do. We do know how to show up and work. We do know how to pay our bills. We do know how to check off our to-do list. We do know how to suck it up and do what's expected of us. We do know how to do all of these things, but one thing that we don't know how to do, one thing that seems to elude us, is we don't know how to live. We don't know how to find joy in the everyday moments of life. We don't know how to rest. We don't know how to have enough or feel like we are enough. We don't know how to be present with ourselves and with the people that we love the most. We don't know how to love without a restriction, to celebrate with full abandon. We don't know how to tap into childlike wonder. And like my mom watching her car keys and her car rolling further and further away from her, our lives, for many of us, we see it moving further and further away from us, and we feel helpless to take hold of it. We feel powerless to live the kind of lives that we actually hope to live, lives full of meaning, joy, peace, love, purpose, and fullness. You know, one of the joys of parenting, if you don't know, I have two young boys, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And a little known fact about them is they're literally obsessed with K-pop phenomenon BTS. And if you know, BTS recently released a new album, and my house has been chaos because my wife recently became a big BTS fan. Both of my boys are big BTS fans. And literally every day we're listening to this new album on repeat. My son knows exactly all of the songs, the names, and what track number they are. So they're like, Daddy, Appa, can you play track number 7? Can you play track number 12? And now we're looking at choreo on YouTube, and I'm trying to learn the dances with him. I'll do it for you one day, I promise. Not today. Not till it's fully ripened. But when I look at my boys, one of the joys of parenting is I watch them. And I swear, they laugh harder, they cry harder, they dance harder than anyone that I've ever known in my entire life. And when I watch them dancing their hearts out and singing freely, when I see them full of joy and full of wonder, geeking out to BTS, dancing, I start to notice something as well. I start to notice my lack of all that all the more. Somewhere along the way, you and I, we've forgotten what it means to live like that. And look, this doesn't just happen in a moment. It usually happens over many moments, seemingly insignificant, inconsequential moments, but they add up. Life slowly grinds us to death over time, killing our hearts day by day in the sludge of monotony and mundane, subtly chipping away at our souls, leaving us completely numb and empty inside until one day we ask ourselves, what happened to me? Like, how did I get here? I'm fully in dad mode. I just turned 39. And every year I look in the mirror and I say, how did I get here? What happened? How did I get this dad bod? I don't know. Right? Have you ever gone to a place in your life where you wonder, how did I end up here in my life? How did I get here? What brought me to this place? I used to be so full of life, so optimistic, so full of joy and wonder. I used to be able to dream and hope. I used to be able to be so much more fun and radiant. What happened to me? The problem here is that you and I, we have a translation issue. When God talks about life and when we talk about life, we're often not talking about the same thing, even though we're using the same word. I love this example. I'm Korean, and so back in the motherland, we have this restaurant called Pizza Hut. Now, I know, Western colonization. Anyway, if you go to Pizza Hut here in the States, like, it's mid, right? Like, it's on the lower echelon of, like, pizza establishments. You probably wouldn't take a nice, fine date to Pizza Hut. Some of you are shaking your heads. That might be a hot take. It's not a hot take. Pizza Hut is not the greatest pizza establishment here in America. But if you go to Korea, yo, Pizza Hut's on fire. Like, Pizza Hut's low-key, like, a fine dining restaurant. They got sweet potato in the crust. They got, like, melted cheese on top. And so Pizza Hut in Korea is, like, a fine dining establishment. And so Pizza Hut to an American is different than Pizza Hut to a Korean. And in the same way, when we say the word life, when we think about what life is and what God says life is, they're usually not the same thing. When we talk about life, what we're often talking about is merely existing. I'm alive, I'm breathing, I'm existing. But when God talks about life, he's actually talking about something so much more. This week, every year, we spend time telling the story of Jesus going to the cross, dying, and coming back to life. And the question we reflect on during this time is, why did he do it? Why did he go to the cross? Why did he die? Why did he resurrect from the grave? And what does it mean for me? We know the ending of his story, but what does that have to do with our story and the drama of our lives? Here's the thing. Jesus didn't die on the cross for you and I to merely exist, for us to be mindless zombies, autopiloting through the work week at our tech companies or our jobs, for us to be disengaged and rarely present in our relationships and always staring at the black mirror of our phone screens, for us to be numb and apathetic and hopeless and joyless. We often forget why Jesus actually came. Jesus didn't come just to forgive us of our sins. Jesus didn't come just to get us to some blissful afterlife after we die. Jesus came to give us life here and now, in whatever you're going through, in the circumstances of your everyday life, in the troubles and the hardships that we endure day by day, moment by moment. And if the gospel is not real here and now, we don't care about what it means in the afterlife. The beauty of the gospel is not that one day we're going to escape this place. The beauty of the gospel is that life has come here and now. Jesus didn't come to make bad people good. He came to make dead people come alive. And this is why we celebrate Easter. This is why the resurrection of Jesus is such good news. Wherever you are, whatever you're going through, Jesus offers you an invitation: come alive. I want us to look to one passage in Matthew 27, verses 50 through 54. This is the word of the Lord. And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tomb broke open. The bodies of many holy people who died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." Let me paint the picture here. When Jesus comes out of that grave, I don't know if you know this, but he didn't come out of it alone. The record is that many bodies that were already in the grave before Jesus died, they actually were raised to life with him. They actually came out of their graves. They went into town, and it says they even appeared before many people. There are recorded testimonies of people seeing people that were dead that came back to life when Jesus came back to life. And here's the thing that I want to propose. So many of us, we follow Jesus to the cross, but very few of us follow Jesus into life. In John chapter 10, verse 10, it says, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." The good news of Easter isn't just that Jesus came out of that grave. The good news of Easter is that he invites all of us to follow him out of death and into life. Listen, Jesus didn't say, I came so you can have a decent life. He didn't say, I came so that you could just have a really good, enjoyable life. He said, I came so that you may have life to the full. Now, the Greek word here for to the full is this word peirousos, and it means overflowing. It means abundant. It means beyond what's necessary. It's like exceeding our expectations. It's life overflowing more than enough. But the way Jesus defines abundance is so different from the way that we would define abundance. The kind of abundance Jesus is talking about here isn't about material wealth. It isn't about a pain-free life. It isn't about getting everything that you want. It isn't about consistent emotional highs. Remember, Jesus himself lived an abundant life, and it included rejection. It included suffering. It included pain. It included sacrifice. It included the cross. The abundant life Jesus promises us is peace, even when everything is chaos. It's joy, despite our circumstances. It's purpose and meaning, even when it doesn't look the way that we expected it to. It's freedom to be our truest selves. It's not a life of more stuff. It's a life filled with God's presence. It's not mere survival. It's overflow. And this is the invitation of the gospel to this life of fullness, this life of so much more, of abundance. And this is the invitation today. I want to look to one more passage and we'll close. Revelation 21:5. It says, he who was seated on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. Resurrection reminds us that newness is possible. For every hopeless circumstance, newness is possible. For every broken relationship, newness is possible. For every injustice in our world, and there's way too many to count, newness is possible. And I love that the passage says, I am making. It's a present tense verb. It's an action verb, meaning he's still making. He's still working. He's still in the business of making things new. Even in the areas of our lives where it feels like God is absent, where we're left wondering, God, where are you? Why aren't you moving? Why aren't you here? Even in those places, the hope of the gospel is that God is still active and moving and working. And if Easter reminds us of anything, it's that Easter reminds us that the last thing is never the worst thing, that the story isn't over if the story isn't good. And notice this, Jesus doesn't say that I'm making all new things. He says I'm making all things new. Like, he's not us. He's not like us when we break something, when things stop working, when things start getting difficult, when things die, we toss them out and we buy something new to replace it. He doesn't say, I'm making all new things. He says, I'm making all things new, right? When my phone breaks, I toss it out, get a new one. When something that I have doesn't work anymore, we replace it. When our jobs don't bring us fulfillment, we get a new one. When our relationship is beyond repair, we find someone else. But God is not like us. He doesn't give up on things that are broken. He doesn't give up on things that are hopeless. He doesn't give up on things that seem dead. God doesn't abandon creation, he renews it. And this is good news for us, because no matter how hopeless, how broken, or lifeless things may seem, God is in the business of resurrecting them. And so this is my invitation to you. We know the ending of Jesus' story, but we don't know how our story is going to pan out. But the invitation of Easter and the invitation of resurrection is that God wants to meet us in our story, and that his ending would redefine, enhance, and rebreathe life into our own stories. And that's the invitation for you today. If you are in that place and you're wondering, how did I get here? This is not the kind of life that I want to be living. This is not the kind of life I imagined for myself. I feel like I'm merely existing, just breathing, just scraping by. The promise of resurrection, and I know a lot of pastors will claim this, isn't that your life is going to get all of a sudden better. Is that in the midst of everyday life, in the midst of the mundane, in the midst of the pain, we can find a life that brings something to our souls, a resurrection, if you will, a resuscitation of our souls and the inside of our hearts.